Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome to another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I am your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, Stephen Godfrey covers college football for SB Nation. He's fantastic. You will love it. It's 40 minutes with Stephen. We'll get right to it here in just a minute because it's great stuff. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Right now, the Mix 5 for 5, Country Fried Steak Crystal, Country Fried Chicken Crystal included. I tell you about it all the time, Crystal's bigger breakfast combo. Need a quick meal in the morning, something to fill you up for the day, you can get it right there. The French toast sticks come with the fresh cracked eggs, bacon, biscuit, grits. It's all there at Crystal. And then late in the day, it's hot out now, you can get that Kool-Aid slushy, the caramel mocha frost. We tell you about happy hour, 59 cent ices, 59 cent crystals. There at Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, 662-257-1900 is the number. Clark Ford, Inc. is the website. Call Corey. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes. Get the quote. No haggling. Just a great deal. And then you can either shop it around or you can go ahead and let Corey Clark and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of this podcast, and that's get right to the bottom line, let you get a great deal with no haggling, take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. And at the end of your deal, tell Corey you heard about it here on the Beer Garden, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. The podcast also brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. It's a full-service advertising and public relations firm. It does business throughout the country with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500s to local startups. It's a simple logic that they use. They find a way to tell a story about the client, captivates an audience, so that audience eventually does business with that client. They focus first and foremost on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients, whatever that entails, whether it's a social media plan, a television advertisement, or a corporate communications plan. Whatever you need to get a business through good or bad times, SPM always finds the right path forward. To get in touch with them, email Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. The podcast also brought to you by Tuna Chesa Charters. Let John Fryer and the people there at Tuna Chesa in Biloxi take care of you. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions. He knows where to put you on the fish you want to catch. It's located at 200 East 8th Street, Slip C2 in Biloxi. Check out their Facebook page or give them a call, 228-348-7817. Whether you're looking for a quick fishing trip inshore, a serious deep-sea fishing excursion, or anything in between, let John and the folks at Tuna Chesa Charters take care of you. Snapper season has been extended another 8 weeks or so. So if you're headed down to the Gulf, get in touch with John. Get that snapper fishing fix that you've been jonesing. You can take care of that with Tuna Chesa Charters. Let's go now to Stephen Godfrey of SB Nation. 40 minutes of college football. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, Stephen, thanks so much for joining us here on the podcast. I got to start with the we're taping this on Friday morning. It might be middle of the weekend before it's loaded. It's going to be before Ole Miss's and Ole Miss and Barney Farrar and everyone respond. Hugh Freeze, everyone responds to the NCAA. I'm curious. You've been following this story pretty closely. From a national perspective, what are you looking for? What do you expect in Monday's response or Tuesday's response whenever it comes down?
I think that there's still a lot of ways this could go before we ultimately get to the committee. And that's what I couldn't prognosticate and say it's one direction or the other. I know a couple things that would lead me in a couple paths. I'm trying not to be ambiguous here, but I think it's obvious, and Neil, you know this, that Ole Miss has not distanced itself from Hugh Freeze or vice versa in any manner. They've had multiple opportunities to do that throughout this process. So that strongly insinuates, as do, you know, conversations you and I have had with various people, that they're not going to suddenly break apart, that they are going to present and defend as a unified front. And I think they'll continue to do so, which kind of leads a person to believe that they're not going to suddenly try and strike some sort of deal, because it's very obvious that the NCAA is not in this to go after a straw man, that they are in this specifically based on, I think, just the veracity and the way they work the case as it's developed going back 4.5 years now. They are going for a headshot, you would say. And so, you know, that's the point of conflict. The university is not backing away from its head coach. The NCAA doesn't seem to be pacified by trying to strike some sort of deal. Now, could a deal come? Yes, but I don't anticipate a deal coming next week.
I hate to refer to a human being in this way. I don't mean to, because Barney Farrar is a person with a family and all that. But if he's offered up as a sacrificial lamb of sorts, I've never gotten the impression that for the NCAA that would be enough.
No, I don't think that for the NCAA. I think in terms of optics, it would be a disaster. We're now looking at a situation. And this is, keep in mind, on the national level, when you step outside of what's going on in Oxford, this is running parallel with North Carolina. And both of these investigations, these are not the only two investigations the NCAA runs. They are running hundreds of inquiries and investigations. They're a very, very large entity. But by far right now, North Carolina and Ole Miss are the two most prominent. And both of those are sort of raising a lot of questions in the length, the direction, a seeming sort of aimlessness. Ole Miss especially, because there was this big turn after Laramie Tunsil. Of course, we know now that the amended NOA really didn't involve Tunsil at all. That doesn't look good. The optics don't look good for the NCAA. So they've got to be able to, and this is why I go back to, they're not going to be pacified with a Barney Farrar or anybody of that ilk or level, is because they've taken a long, long time. And they understand the court of public perception would react extremely poorly to picking off a couple associates. They're going for the big fish here.
So, I thought it was interesting, and maybe I didn't know the context. Freeze was in Destin, and I don't have the quote right here in front of me. I should be more prepared. But the basic part of his quote was, "Hey, you guys tell me when." How many of the people who have been charged with failure to monitor have lost their jobs? And I took a couple of things from that. I took one, he thinks that failure to monitor charge might very well stick, because I think it's going to be part of, and I could end up looking like an idiot on Monday. So if I do, I do. It won't be the first time. I think Monday's response is going, or Tuesday, whenever it comes out, Hugh Freeze, his basic message is going to be, I didn't know about these things. Barney Farrar did it behind my back. I didn't know. Perhaps here's his concession. Perhaps I should have known. I run a compliant department, but perhaps in this case I was not vigilant enough. Here's your olive branch, NCAA. Suspend me a couple of games, but I'm not going down here. That's kind of how I took it. I could be way wrong. I also took it as the beginning of a victory lap of sorts for Hugh Freeze, with you went after me, you wanted to get me fired, you wanted to get show cause, you're not going to get it.
Here's the thing, Neil. I feel like you're very, very strongly in a plausible direction. Obviously, we don't know right now. But what's so interesting about this is the behavior being displayed by both parties in this, and this is why I don't feel like anything is going to be brokered outside of going to the COI, going to the Committee on Infractions. I guess it would be at this point. I think as we're into June, I think we're looking more at October, November to go to the COI. I don't see how that path is avoidable right now. Freeze is displaying a sense of calm and collectedness. They're recruiting as such. They're operating the program as such that they're not out anytime soon. Whereas I don't see the NCAA after 4.5 years being pacified by picking off Barney Farrar. So it's very fascinating. You know, I hate to be repetitive here.
No, but it appears that we're headed to a battle.
Because, this is a prize fight.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. We're headed. The heavyweights are going to get into the ring.
And let me say this.
Yeah.
Let me say this real fast. When Freeze asks about the historical perspective in these matters. Perspective is a dangerous thing right now because the NCAA is not operating in the same way it used to. I think you have to look at these investigations and the way they're structured, the way that the COI would work is largely the same. But this is a new day for the NCAA post Miami. They were absolutely dragged through the mud. Okay, everything that they've done operating between really. Everything after about Miami and then sort of their failure to get their teeth down on Penn State, because almost all of that was just overturned in a matter of time. That's why people are clamoring right now for the NCAA to do something about Baylor, and they can't. So they are going to work as hard as humanly possible to make something stick. And Ole Miss fans always throw their hands up in disgust when I say stuff like that because they think they're just the whipping boy, that Ole Miss was an easy, you know, was unfairly targeted. They were an easy target. That's the problem. You know, this dates back to the way that Houston Nutt ran his program combined with the fact that, you know, now the way that Hugh Freeze ran it, at least early on, we know. And I think that there was a tremendous amount of pride involved early on when Freeze was at Ole Miss, or is at Ole Miss, and the combination of those things with an existing inquiry going on because of what happened, what happened under Nutt, and Freeze's defiance, and I think really a bruised ego when you go back to that fateful tweet. I mean, that thing really, Neil, is, you know, that's the shot at the Archduke. When you go back and look at this, when this thing is done, we'll go back and look at that tweet, and not even the precursor stuff, not even women's basketball or track or whatever brings the NCAA to campus, because people don't understand. The NCAA is on a lot of campuses a lot of the time. It is not uncommon.
Sure.
So Ole Miss could have easily, I put it this way, if there was an issue with women's basketball and track and even an incident with a previous previous coaching staff, most SEC programs for that matter, that doesn't guarantee that your current football coach and their doings and dealings would be picked apart in this manner. Freeze took it personally. Freeze handled it. He handled it horribly. I think his ego got the best of him. And I think that they're paying for it now. Now, at the same time, what he actually did may have been able to maybe it was easier to connect for the NCAA than people want to admit around Ole Miss. So I'm starting to question the message and the narrative that was pushed by Ole Miss throughout all of this to people like you and me was, well, you know, this is just because they were already here, and if you turn over rocks long enough, you're going to find dirt. It's funny because I don't know if you saw Derek Mason had this quote at spring meetings, and it kind of, I loved it. You know, it was, we're all clean here, we don't cheat.
I saw that.
Poor Derek.
Oh my God.
Poor Derek. I'll have to ask him about that in person next time I see him. My gosh.
Does he believe that?
You know, Vanderbilt is a gilded lily. It's a weird place, man.
I don't know, man.
Here's the thing about Vanderbilt, just as an aside. It is entirely possible that he is running his program 110% clean. To the best of his knowledge, because I think the system this is an aside, no doubt, but the system he imported or is trying to import that came from David Shaw at Stanford is really as 180 degrees opposite of what goes on at places like Ole Miss and Auburn and Alabama as you can get. So maybe. I tell you what, if I'm Derek, though, I step out there and say, Vanderbilt, we're running this thing clean. And I might leave it at that.
Yeah.
I may let the other 13 schools fend for themselves, especially in this conference. But
the rest of the league, man. So wrapping up the Ole Miss part of this conversation.
Yeah.
This is what's and this is where I want your expertise. And I think you've already answered it, but I'm going to make sure. If in the prize fight that I think we're headed towards prize fight. In that prize fight, if Hugh Freeze, quote, wins, end quote, maybe he gets a 2-game suspension, whatever. Do coaches around the league, not even around the league, around the country go, hey, you know what? There's a lot of hot air about the NCAA is going to do this. The NCAA is going to do this, but let's roll. We can quit worrying about the NCAA. They have some teeth, but the teeth aren't sharp.
Well, they already have quit worrying about the NCAA. That's how we got here. I mean, I think that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so if after all of this buildup with Freeze, if Freeze wins,
look, if Freeze. If Ole Miss, I mean, defining a win is tough because, there's some hubris assumed in that on Ole Miss's part, that they're going to walk away from Freeze being suspended for 6 games, taking maybe you can tell me off the top of my head, where do they finish in recruiting this year in the 17 cycle? 30s, 40s,
50s? Yeah, it was bad.
Okay. Sustaining another one of those, having another losing season, hey, folks, this is still Ole Miss in the SEC West. All right, Kevin Sumlin's coaching for his job right now. Brett Bielema is going to probably emerge on the hot seat by week 3 or 4. This is still the most cutthroat little corner of a neighborhood in college football. So this idea that Ole Miss is going to win because maybe Freeze has to sit 4 games. I mean, maybe they're just saying let's spike the 2017 season and Freeze is going to sit out 6 games. And you know what? Because you're not bowl eligible, I think a lot of fans would view that as a W. But at the same time, how does that play long term? No one really knows. This is just, man, this is such a strange thing. I don't know if you get this situation, this confidence from Freeze. And really, I don't think you get this situation in which you see a university almost unilaterally move behind a head coach without Freeze beating Alabama and having the success that he had. Because now I think there's a lot of key influencers in Ole Miss. I don't really look so much at the athletic director, and this is nothing for or against Ross Bjork. But you look at the people who, you know, Ross is here to – Ross. Any modern athletic director is at a university to raise money and get influencers to move in the right direction, okay? So I think I look at the influencers. I look at the people with money that are collected around this program in cities like Memphis and Jackson and so forth. They're smitten, Neil, and I think that's why Ole Miss is down to the fence. People have rallied around Hugh Freeze and not Ole Miss, which is perplexing from the outside, because I can tell you as these things go, he would have been canned at so many other institutions, and they would have been fine deflecting and absorbing the blow for a year or two, a season or two, and then starting over with a new head coach. I don't think Ole Miss fans understand that, Neil. This is a $4.5 million a year job tomorrow, for the right person. I think they're worried about what happened in the last coaching cycle. It's just fascinating. Freeze has built just an insane amount of equity.
All right, you know a lot of coaches, man. You know what I mean, and you can do the modest thing if you want, but I'll do it for you. You can get damn near half and maybe more Division I coaches on your phone within a couple hours. So you know a lot of people. So this is one of the things that I find fascinating about the Ole Miss deal. And this is not me calling for Hugh Freeze's head at all. I'm not the one that makes that decision. If Ole Miss decides to ride Hugh Freeze for 10 years and give him a complete opportunity to completely restart the program, that's Ole Miss's decision. That's on those people, and if that's the decision they choose, then so be it. If it were to go the other way, if the money is where the money is today, which is ninth nationally somewhere before mm-hmm. some of the new contracts, it's a top – in terms of payment, it's a top 15 job. It's in the SEC West. The facilities are pretty nice. Bjork's done a really good job of keeping the facilities updated, improving facilities, all that stuff. I think Ross doesn't even get enough credit for what all he's done.
No. Also, I guess we should point out right now, Ross Bjork did not hire Hugh Freeze.
He didn't. You know, you got the Grove, all that stuff. It's a solid program. So if the money is the same, which is roughly $4.8 million a year, which is nice coin in Oxford, I could live on it, how attractive would the job be? And I know there'd be some NCAA stuff to overcome, but...
Oh, extremely attractive. That's what I think. I think this is a classic case of... no one does self-loathing better than a Mississippian. And I think this is at the core of this. He's a native son. Hell, he's from 20 minutes up the road. I think all this plays in. You don't want another outsider to come in here who doesn't understand this place. I think it's fascinating. It's brilliant psychology. It really is. On the part of Freeze and his ardent inner circle and his supporters in Memphis, you don't want another person to come in from the outside. Well, let me tell you something. It's an SEC West job. They're going to pay you over $4 million a year. You probably start, even if they got a young guy. And I won't even name names. Like, I'm not trying to start anything like that. I'm just saying. So, like, every year, Neil, there are young coaches, obviously, that come up that are mentioned for Power 5 jobs. So let's just say one of them at random gets this job.
Okay.
It started almost $3 million. Incentive structure's there to get you to five. You have facilities, and you have a structure around you. The irony thing is, you know, I've definitely got some issues with the way that Ross has done some things politically. This is just sort of a personal opinion. Almost as an alumnus, too, I've kind of scratched my head at some of that stuff. And also, I think the Twitter fight stuff that Freeze gets into is rubbed off on Bjork, which I think is very unbecoming. But, you know, let people like me do that for a living. Don't subject yourself to that. But this is a great job, is what I'm getting at. This is a fantastic job. And let's say that you go in the different direction, Neil. You go out and you get an established guy, okay, of which I know people would be interested. Flat out would be interested. So when all this is breaking around, well, I say breaking, there's so many tiers of, you know, so many times this thing is broken, so to speak. But when I was at the coaching convention in January here in Nashville, there's that job was talked about in a very positive way. The job was, not the people involved in it currently. This idea that Ole Miss can't live without Hugh Freeze is just fascinating to me. It's good PR for him. I personally don't agree with that, but I don't agree with the fact that I don't know if there's a lot of places, Neil, that are where your success is live or die, ride or die, based on one human being. It's just not. Coaching's different now.
All right. I don't have you for a whole lot longer, so let me get to a couple other things that I'm curious about. You mentioned Kevin Sumlin earlier, the AD there at Texas A&M. Really didn't pull many punches. He basically said, got to win big. There are more metrics than just winning, but essentially he's got to win. So in your opinion, Stephen, how many games, what does Kevin Sumlin have to do to be the head coach at Texas A&M a year from now?
You know, I think A&M struggles with the same thing that Arkansas struggles with, and that it has an identity crisis. It doesn't know where it should live and how it, you know, what's acceptable and what is functional for their program. It's funny, Arkansas has been in this conference for 20 something years, I think more than that.
Yeah.
And every couple years there's a massive identity crisis. I think they're about to hit it again because, you know, Bielema is like 10 and 20 or something in conference play. It just hasn't worked out the way they thought, where they were going to be that dominant. A&M's even worse because they're newer to the conference, but they also have to deal with the expectations and the comparisons to Texas, and it's a team they don't even play anymore. I mean, that's just the special brand of insanity, you know, native to college football. So I don't know if I can put a number on it necessarily, but I think that they're going to have an unrealistic expectation. You know, right out of the gate, Texas A&M and UCLA is going to be a fascinating game to watch because the loser of that is going to be squarely in the sights of some key people at their university. Of course, Jamel Moore is the coach at UCLA. So, I mean, I don't know if an 8-win season makes people happy, and maybe it should. And so I really don't have a good answer for you, Neil. I know that they get – Alabama's at home. I don't know how much that matters. Auburn, I think, will be improved. They get them at home. It's a workable schedule, you know. It's not impossible in terms of getting to maybe, let's just say, 9 wins. But I think 9 wins may have to be it. But I think it's going to come down to a more dangerous thing, which is, like, of those 9 wins, who, you know, does that include Alabama? Does that include Auburn? Does that include – you know, are you making a statement, or are you just beating up on, you know, Ole Miss, who's on probation, basically, and, you know, scraping through, and then you're 500 in conference play? I don't know if they can sell that in major Texas markets right now. It's a very strange time for them.
I love Brett Bielema. I'm a media guy, so I maybe that's changing. It's affecting my view. Maybe I view him as, you know, he's funny and he seems, yeah, to be open and stuff like that. He doesn't take his job so damn seriously. Brandon Marcello hates me, but I agreed with almost every word of his rant the other day. I couldn't read it all because I'm blocked on Twitter, but I agreed with most of it. I mean, I really
Brandon's, don't worry about it. Brandon's grumpy. You can tell him.
Yeah, that. But I agree with most everything he said. I mean, everybody closes us off, whatever. It doesn't matter. Bielema doesn't do that. I think people kind of know him a little bit. He's very likable. He's not winning really big at Arkansas, but I don't know that you can.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that winning big at Arkansas on a consistent level, year in and year out, is realistic.
Well, where is it realistic? Let's back up.
Alabama.
When I get into these conversations with Arkansas fans specifically, it's very hard to argue down why not us. I think they've got to get their house in order to a certain degree. I don't know if Bielema is the guy that necessarily turns them into a perennial 10-12 win team, but I mean, they're still arguing about where they're going to play college football games, you know, Little Rock or Northwest, and you've got to consolidate some of that power, start pulling in the right direction. I think you need to get a better presence in Memphis and recruit. I think A&M helps them a lot. That's why they're playing every year in Dallas. In Jerry World, the pieces are there. I get their frustration. I do. But it's still very, very hard. They don't have a natural talent base in the state alone that could field a successful SEC team, which is it's ironic because then you go to the state of Mississippi where you have three Division I schools, two in the SEC, and you almost do sometimes. You almost do have a team in Mississippi that you could field that could win 10 games. So I think population, this is super boring, Neil, but as population shift continues in Northwest, that corridor, Northwest Arkansas, continues to fill up with people, and the style of football that they played up there, I think you can do something over the next 10 to 15 years. It will be a better job 15 years from now than it is right now, but it's still a really good job. Now, that being said, the way that you compete in the West, I don't know. I definitely think Bielema didn't understand it. Someone made a really good point. A Wisconsin blogger said something to me on Twitter yesterday about, isn't it weird that he's still telling us about the things that he did at Wisconsin? Like, he's still bragging about that? Like, you don't hear that from coaches normally. That's a really good point. Like he doesn't have anything to brag about at Arkansas.
No, it's funny. Which job's better, Ole Miss or Arkansas?
Arkansas,
okay. Dennis Dodge says Butch Jones is underrated.
Butch Jones is misunderstood. Hopefully I'll be working on something to elaborate upon that in the future. Butch is an underrated coach and program manager, but he has got to. Butch has got to rectify. Not to sound too Southern, Neil, but Butch has got to rectify. There's some fundamental things about him he's got to learn to be more comfortable about. He is the guy who made the best sales pitch that would say yes to Tennessee when they got rid of Dooley. But he has a certain unease about him. He's a fascinating guy to me. And I know a lot of people just look at football and X's and O's and wins and losses, but I live 3.5 hours away from Knoxville, but I live in the middle of the state. And there's a weird thing about Butch here where they have wanted to love him so much that it's turning into hate because they resent the fact they can't wrap their arms all the way around him. And I think he's just never particularly comfortable in his own skin, and it shows.
He doesn't back away from some of the life champions and some of that stuff. I mean, he stays on that stuff that
he screwed up and doubled down, which is a tough thing to do. Think about how we would champion a coach, and the first coach in the media, Neil, who walks back his own stuff and is honest about it. Imagine how that would go over with us. We'd love whatever coach that was, who just said, you know what? Yeah, it was the heat of the moment. I said something I shouldn't have. It was kind of dumb. I kind of laughed at the thing I saw on the internet. Let's move on. We would love a coach for just being that honest.
Yeah,
Instead, they have to
it's the advice
that deep on this crap.
It's the advice so many people try to give Hugh Freeze. Get off Twitter.
Butch and Hugh are sort of cousins in that way. From what I'm told about Hugh Freeze, the amount of time that he spends monitoring his own perception is alarming. Not to bring it back to Ole Miss. Butch doesn't spend that amount of time because he already knows what the score is. But also, Butch didn't have the kind of success that Hugh did in the front. See, for Hugh, it was all adulation, right? He wrote a particular public image up the chain almost perfectly. It was 6-6 the first year, and then they were, 7 wins or something like that. Beat Georgia Tech in that bowl, and then it was beating Alabama and going to the Partner Bowls and all that stuff. And so what that does for your personality and like your local Q rating is astronomical. Whereas Butch never really had that. So Butch knows up front, he's never had the honeymoon, whereas Hugh had the honeymoon. So yeah, none of these guys really need to worry about any of this stuff. If they were just a little more forthright and honest, not necessarily with the media, but just in general, they wouldn't have to play these games on social media.
I've heard different things. I was around some Georgia people over the weekend.
My apologies.
people getting there's already a kind of a split a little bit with some Georgia fans about whether Kirby's doing well or not. Some point at the recruiting and stuff and go, yeah, and then some point
the dumbest fan base in America.
I was going to ask you because he's recruiting at a really high level.
Those are the dumbest people, because they're my people. Those are the stupidest people. Neil, my God, they're so stupid. I mean, I'll get on whatever station in Atlanta and say this, and I'm not trying to hide from it. Georgia fans are stupid. They've been driven insane. They've been driven insane by Steve Spurrier, Urban Meyer, Nick Saban, et cetera, so forth. Because every single thing about Georgia says that they should have had a moment, or they should have had a run, or they should have had a single title like that. And it has driven them mad. You made a decision that was questionable in firing Rick when you did, the way it went down. And, you know, I said something on like a podcast about this last summer, and the you know, their Pravda little media consortium over there jumped on me and said, well, he didn't get fired. Okay, whatever. Fine. I'm not going to sit here and split that hair with you. But Kirby was an interesting hire. Kirby on paper right now has everything that is needed to break that negative streak of Saban assistants not becoming successful. I think he's better suited for that job than Muschamp was at Florida, and I think he's better suited that job than Dooley was at Tennessee, and on and on and on. But they're just idiots. They're stupid fans. I don't understand. He blew up a lot of things. He blew up a locker room culture. He blew up a system and a philosophy that had been in place for like, what was it, 12 years, 13 years?
Yeah.
They were going to have upheaval. They started a young quarterback. They had virtually no offensive line. So I don't know what people expected. They got thumped. They got beat up in conference play. This was going to happen. They didn't want to admit that they had to start from scratch if they were going to make this change on Rick. And so now that they've done that, I think they are recruiting. I think they are building an infrastructure the way that you can and the way that you should at Georgia to beat back Alabama on I-20 and to assert your dominance in the state. I'm not saying they're going to win every kid in the state of Georgia. It's different. You win every kid in the state of Alabama if you're Alabama or Auburn, because it's more, the culture is insular, right? There's less people moving to the state of Alabama. Florida and Georgia are different. Those places, it's hard for every single person to grow up a Florida State fan in the state of Florida. Same goes with Georgia now, because there's so many people that have moved there. I mean, that's why Harbaugh, look, I'm going to tell you this right now. Harbaugh, Franklin, and Meyer love Atlanta. They live and die in Atlanta, because Atlanta is a southern city with southern football talent of the highest order, sometimes comparable to whatever Florida can put out or Texas, but it's filled with Yankees. So they get to have connections and they get to have access points that they wouldn't get in places like Birmingham or Jackson or Memphis. So you're not going to take the top 22 out of the state of Georgia every year for UGA, but you damn near need to take 16 or 15 of them.
Yeah,
and he's getting to that point. I don't understand this. Chaney's a good play caller. He's not going to bowl you over with sexiness, but they don't want that anyway. They're a boring ass school. They like to run a boring ass pro style. No, I'm serious. I mean, like, when they're successful, they run a very base offense extremely well, because they're able to recruit really good running backs and really good skill position guys. So I don't know if your issues with Chaney. I mean, I don't. I think the defense it's just too TBD to even pass judgment on. I don't know what they're idiots. Anyone saying, look, Kirby may be a bad hire 4 years from now, but you just don't know. You blew up one of the most consistent programs in college football. This is your fault. You have to deal with it now.
And it doesn't help them any that Mark's gone to Miami, and things look like they're kind of on the uptick there.
Yeah, they're going to be in a weird spot with quarterback this year, and because Rick is having to do some similar things in terms of like just clearing out ideological issues in Coral Gables. But yeah, no, in 2 or 3 years, they're going to be competing with everyone, maybe except Florida State and Clemson. And then I think they're going to get really, really close to them. They're going to bring Miami back to what Miami was supposed to be in that conference. He'll do it over time. I don't know. I'm curious to see how long he's committed to doing that. If like Mark Richt at Miami is a 4 to 5 year thing, or if he's trying to aim for another 10 to 12 years, that'd be very interesting to, not that he would answer that, but depending on his philosophy there and depending on how long he wants to go, Miami, yeah, Miami can be the perennial 10 win team that, you know, that its fans expect.
All right, last couple of things and we're done. I really appreciate your time. A lot of talk around here about Nick Fitzgerald. Is he, not fair to say the next Dak, but is he going to have similar sort of success to that Dak Prescott had at Mississippi State? Is this a season when you look at for Mississippi State that they could be one of the big surprise teams in the league?
You're comparing him to Dak?
A little bit.
Morons.
Not in terms of playing style, but in terms of kind of an out of left field success level.
So if he's successful, does that mean everyone can start calling Dak Prescott a system quarterback? I love Dak. I really do. He's, if you had to ask me, like, who are the nicest student athletes you've ever spoken to, I think Dak is on a list of like three. You know, he's amazing. I'm just joking because of the Mississippi State has a shiny new thing and like a nationally recognized thing, which they don't get a lot of, and they're having a very interesting time learning how to handle it, and it's just been funny to watch. And I can't help if that comes off condescending because it just really is funny. Nick Fitzgerald is not Dak Prescott, but I think they're better suited to have one of those great Mississippi State years, and they're, I wouldn't say totally discounted by any stretch, but they're not going to, there will be very little focus upon them. Let's see. I've got one of these, I've got my copy of Athlon right in front of me. Neil, let's see what we got. Projected record 7-5. So yeah, there's your typical Mississippi State expectation. This is the year that I think they flip and end up 8-4 and really build towards even the following season, because they definitely had some questions going into last year that I think they've addressed. So,
well, that was my follow-up, because he hired Jimmy Sexton. If, let's say he goes 8-4. And
oh, hey, I mean, again, and I can't say this about Mississippi State people thinking that I'm trying to be cruel or something like that, which I don't understand, because it should be a compliment of the job, I guess. He's going to get out of there as soon as he can. He just did. He's not there for life. He never wanted to be there for life. It was always a step job for him. Things didn't work out that way. He screwed some stuff up on the back end and didn't parlay that first run that they went on. He's not going to be at Mississippi State forever. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell fans. No, yes, if they go 8-4 and the right job opens, I mean, the jobs right now that we're all privately expecting to open, I don't know if one jumps out at me that necessarily says Dan Mullen, but it could be a weird year. You don't know. Like, things could happen.
Taylor Zarzer asked me this, so I'll ask you. We'll finish with this. He said, you can have any of the 13 coaches not name Saban, any of the 13 other SEC coaches not name Saban for one season, and then you can have the same setup for 5 seasons. Where do you go? What names come to mind right away?
Wait, so you pick one coach that you want to go on a one-season run with, and then one coach that you want to go on a 5-year run with?
Yeah, and you can have the same guy or you can pick different guys, but you can't pick Saban.
So the purpose of the question is to ask who's the best one-year, like, extreme locker room motivator, sort of make something special happen, versus the 5-year planner?
Yeah, and it can be the same guy.
I'm just going to fill this show with dead air for a second.
That's all right.
The problem is you have a lot of – the jury's out on a lot of people at some big-time jobs right now, right? Ed Ogeron and Kirby Smart, and then really Butch Jones for that matter. I think it's very hard to pick Muschamp in any situation, so he's eliminated. Mark Stoops, I'm going to be super interested to see if he doesn't end up getting fired. They go hire somebody like Neil Brown. I think for 1 year I could do Malzahn. for 5 years. I think the real purpose of this exercise, Neil, was to illustrate that you don't have a lot of great program managers out there right now.
Yes, that is correct.
I wouldn't argue against that, because right at 5 years, I'd have to say Dan Mullen.
That was my answer too.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go for 1 year and try and catch lightning, I think Malzahn has obviously shown his ability to do that. And they could have another lightning year this year. And then really, after him, I'd have to say someone. Because someone can do the same. And I don't just say that just because of Manziel. I say that based off of what, you know, people tell me. So, yeah. Dan is the most consistent. Is that so? Let's end this segment by saying Dan Mullen is the most consistent head coach in the SEC after Nick Saban.
I think
you're winning friends and influencing people, Neil.
I think it's a fair argument, though. It is. I mean, Saban clearly of the 14 coaches. If someone says you can have one guy to run your program, well, give me Saban. I'll deal with all the headaches that come with that, but I'm gonna win.
The scariest thing about Nick Saban is we woke up. It's 2017, and the best coach in college football is still at Alabama, and then maybe the coaches 2 through 10 are in different conferences.
Who's the second best coach in the country? Is it Dabo at this point, or is it still Urban Meyer?
Oh, it's Urban. It's Urban. I mean, I was there in Phoenix and I got their teeth kicked in, but no. When you go coaches 2 through 10, you don't come back to the SEC right now.
It's amazing. If
that could change, like I said, people are gonna watch Kirby, people are gonna watch Ed Ogeron. But when you go 2 through 10, you don't come back to the SEC. That is the Saban effect. And I mean, if I do 2 through 10 real fast, like, so you have Harbaugh, Meyer, you have Franklin's probably at 10 now, just because of the season he had based off what they're expecting there. So that, I'm just kind of going by conference now at this point.
Yeah.
Peterson at Washington, maybe like number 9. And again, that's not a single season thing. They are really kind of geared up to do something amazing. Dabo, Jimbo. How many? I think I have like 2 more slots to fill. Tom Herman's in there, and then Stoops. So yeah, so you go Saban, all of those people, and then you start again in the SEC.
And I don't even know where you would fit one of those, whether it's Malzahn or Mullen or whoever. I don't even know where those guys would go. I mean, it's 15-ish.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, I would really start making arguments for. People are going to like scream in their radios, but you talk about like David Shaw, Ken Niumatanolo, you know, guys who run programs that maybe don't have the prestige factor of like Auburn or Georgia or whatever, but like they're still damn good coaches, you know?
Absolutely. I love
what's David funny Shaw. Is like there's a crop too, and we saw this last year with like Willie Taggart to Oregon and Tom Herman to Texas. Is like the AAC right now is turning out some amazing coaches, and they're not taking jobs in the SEC. It's not because they don't want to. I don't know. Maybe they will soon, but it's interesting to watch. The one to watch there is Chad Morris, obviously, because he's an A&M guy.
Well, and you know, A&M is probably smart enough to know that if you're going to get rid of someone, you got to have at least a couple of people in line.
A&M right now has the longest line out the door, and it's June. So, because right off the top of your head, you can say, yeah, Larry Fedora, because he's from College Station, he would totally take that job. I think he knows he's maxed out the circumstances that North Carolina's had. He's maxed that thing out. And then you have Chad Morris. So those are 2 big-time hires in the state of that have state of Texas ties. And this is really going to depend a lot on what Texas does in their first year and how much perception they have to battle. Now, people ask me about Arkansas. Bielma's got a guaranteed contract. So that changes the conversation dramatically. You know, all the other hot seat jobs don't have that instant like. You know, the only other one I can think of is I do think Texas Tech is going to fire Cliff Kingsbury, and I do think they would go after. You have Lincoln Riley, who has interest in that job, and then you have Sonny Dykes, who's an analyst right now at TCU. So that's the only other job that you can look at like that.
I kept you longer than I said I would. I really appreciate your time. It's always fun to visit with you. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I suspect I'll be talking to you sometime next week.
I would suspect I might be right back on the show.
All right, buddy. I appreciate you. Have a good weekend.
Yep.
Again, our thanks to Steven for his time today on The Beer Garden. The podcast also brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. LB's has everything you're looking for. I mean, they've got the catering menu, fresh cuts, the pork, chicken, everything that you might be seeking. They've got it at LB's. Greg Jones and the team there, you can call them, tell them what you're looking for, and they'll have it ready. Or you can do what I love to do, which is just to kind of go in and shop around. Check out the sausages, the Swayze sausage right now, beer, bacon, cheese, and jalapenos. They've got different summer sausages out. It's hot. Sometimes you don't even want to put anything on the grill. You want to fix a little sausage and cheese tray and just chill. They can do that as well. The Italian summer sausage, smoky bacon summer sausage, and the smoked black and blue sausage there at LB's, right across from Kroger in Oxford. And when you go in, the beer fridge is on your left. Grab a six-pack. Make a six-pack of your own, whatever you want to do. Tell Greg you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and that six-pack is just $6. Six craft beers for $6. You can't beat that anywhere. The podcast also brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Get in touch with Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. Can't beat that. Call him at 662-234-2704 or send him an email, jlowe, it's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. That does it for today's Beer Garden. We'll be back later in the weekend. First, the next week, Tony Jones of the Salt Lake Tribune will join. We'll talk about NBA Finals. Warriors, as of this moment, lead 1-0. We'll talk to him earlier Sunday before Game 2. Talk about the Finals and also talk about some things to look for in the NBA offseason there with Tony. So we'll have that to you first part of the week as well. So until then, have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden.